All right, this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, and I'm sitting here with, what's your name?
Kat, is this on?
Yes.
Catherine Hunt. Oh,
put on your headphones, that'll help.
You want to put on your headphones. Sorry for the unprofessional.
This is community radio,
community
folks.
Community radio.
Come and get involved.
And I hope you're listening for the mistakes.
Okay. Kind of.
So tell them who you're with. And
okay. My name is Catherine Hunt, and I'm one of the members of That's My Farmer. This is our 19th year of being organized, and we're a partnership with between faith communities and local CSA farmers, community-supported agricultural farmers. And what we do is we encourage people to visit a farm and sign up for a CSA food share. We also put on a couple of activities during the year, and one is coming up on April 13th, a Saturday, and it's our second annual CSA share fair.
All right, so, and when is that again?
April the 13th at First United Methodist Church from 11 to 2.
But you don't have to be religious to
exactly.
Come to that.
Exactly, yes.
All right, and so let's hear a little background on what a CSA is. It's Community Supported Agriculture, right?
Correct. And what the 19 years ago, people really didn't know about CSAs. It was just kind of something new in the community. And so this group decided they wanted to promote the local farms and help them provide CSA food shares for local people. And what it also developed out of it is our low-income fund. By putting on this fair, any donations brought in goes into a low-income fund so the farmers can provide food shares for people who can least afford them.
And so how does that work, though? You order a food basket, right?
Correct. And that will be delivered at certain spots in the community during the week. And so you get a lot of interesting new produce in some of them and recipes on how to use the food.
But how does that help the farmer, the food basket?
Well, it means that in the beginning of the season, people will sign up for a food share and pay their money. And that helps the farmer provide the seeds, etc., for planting his new crops.
Well, and so he doesn't waste time and energy and money growing something that no one wants.
Right.
But now you can't just order anything. You have to order what the farmers grow.
Yeah, the things have changed over time, and their food shares are large ones or small ones or... and the variety of food. You can request not to get some vegetables and get others.
Right, and so then, but it's going to change over the seasons too.
Exactly, yes. So in the spring and summer, you're going to be having lots of strawberries and that kind of produce. And then later on in the fall, it's going to be mostly root crops.
Uh-huh.
So...
And lettuce still,
oh,
and things
yeah,
like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yes.
And so you're still, and then you're going to know the person that's growing your food.
Exactly. You get to know the farmer. You know, you might be picking up your food share from their booth at the local farmer's market, or you might, it might be left off at somebody's home, and you'll pick it up there. But there'll be times when the farms have an open time for people to come and visit their farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you can take your children and grandchildren out to the farms, etc.
Actually see how they're growing your food.
Exactly.
And what methods they're using.
Right.
And about how, for the, if you're not low in, the low income food basket is free?
That depends. Each farm is different. They work it out in a different way. They may be able to give a person a half a share, and then the person pays for the rest of the share.
Uh-huh.
Or they
is it a group of farmers, or are you just dealing with one farmer?
Well, we have about 15 different farms involved in That's My Farmer.
Right, and so you can get a basket from each farm.
Normally, you sign up with a farm to get a food share.
Well, and so these are small farms that don't grow just one crop, then. They're growing a diversity of crops.
Yes, definitely.
And not monocropping on giant farms. These are literally family farms that you're supporting.
Exactly.
And so is there a networking opportunity, too, when you go to these places? I mean... You're taught because you know the farmer, you might know they might have other information for you too there.
Oh yes, yeah.
About the community.
Right, right.
And it helps the community in general.
Yes, it does. You're eating locally, and so you're not having your food travel a long distance to come to your table. You're learning, they also hand out recipes, so you're learning how to cook some vegetables you may never have seen in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you, by going out to the farm, you certainly see how they're growing their food.
All right, so...
And at our celebration, CSA Share Fair, what happens is you get to visit all the farms, and they'll have information on their CSA format, and you get to taste the delicious snacks that they make that are seasonal.
And so you can choose which farm works best for you.
Yes, exactly. And what size of food share you want.
Did you cover what it was That's My Farmer? Well, that's the name of your organization
exactly.
To begin with. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's anything else you want to say?
Our second event during the year is in the fall, in September.
Uh-huh.
Party Downtown lets us have a big party at their facility, and the farmers provide the food, and Party Downtown cooks it and uh-huh. makes a delicious dinner. And this is another fundraiser for the Low Income Fund.
Any wine or beer?
Oh, yes, at that.
They're making their own wine and beer, too?
For
the party?
Some do, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, but they have it there anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
All right, so your event, say again when your event is?
Our event is our second annual CSA Share Fair on Saturday, April the 13th. And there's lots of activities for children. There'll be face painting and probably some farm animals there to see and other activities for the children.
All right. So, yeah, support your local CSA, community-supported agriculture, and keep your money in the community. And here's a way to stop buying from corporations and supporting corporations, too.
Right.
Right?
Great. Yes.
All right, anything else?
No, that.
All right, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, the show's Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti. I've got an interview coming up with the International Workers of the World. And he's going to talk about general strike and what we would do on a general strike. And I have another forest activist. So... I'm also fooling with cords here. So I've been to several of the events here today. And, all right, thank you. There's some hope, actually, on the environment. Went to a lecture on litigation and the initiative process. And people are having a lot of success with that on local initiatives that you as the citizen have a right to gather a bunch of signatures and get basically whatever you want done by your government without having to have a bill passed. So that's pretty hopeful, and a lot of people are working on that. Something I'm working on is I'd like to see some cardboard recycling instead of sending cardboard into the landfills. And then we also had the Sorry, I'm doing two things at once here. We also had a lot of hope with the one thing that I've been talking about is rooftop solar. There's a lot of we're talking about global warming. The issue is mostly about fossil fuel use. We need to stop using fossil fuels, whether you believe in global warming. And this is what I partly try and do with this show is find some common ground with the middle right and the middle conservative people. And most of them are against corporations, too. They've seen how corporations take your tax dollars and do not do what they're supposed to do with them. And so they've gone on our side. There's some common ground there. And that's one of the things that they're talking about with the fossil fuel companies just will not, these power companies, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and them just are not, they're actually trying to thwart people from doing rooftop solar and stay into fossil fuels. So there's a group fighting against that. All right, so the IWW is here. And he's putting on his headphones. And he's going to talk about their campaigns a little bit. So is there something you specifically want to talk about the, it's, have I got that right? It's international, industrial workers of the world. You guys told me not to say international. It's industrial workers of the world. Although you cover all workers, not just industrial workers.
Yes. Well, industrial refers to, my name is Scott Fife, I'm with the Lane branch of the Industrial Workers of the World. There's two different kinds of union. Craft union is a union where you just organize whatever you happen to. If you're the fender makers in an auto plant, that's what you're organized under. But an industrial worker, you take everybody in the plant and they're organized under as an industry. And so what that means, if the fender makers, they walk out, it doesn't make a big deal because the rest of the factory can keep on producing. But if everybody in the entire factory walks out, then that's what we call industrial unionism. And it can go across industries as well.
Right, and I didn't tell you about this, so I'm putting you on the spot. But unions are not communist, are they? I mean, I read George Seldes was a famous muckraking journalist, and in his stuff, he was saying how the manufacturers all have associations, and the lumber industry has associations. They're all allowed to associate, and they're not communists, supposedly. But unions are really not communist. We have a right to association, don't we?
Yes, that's guaranteed in the Constitution, you know. But that was really, you know, something in the, you know, that happened in the McCarthy era where they wanted to, you know, have people sign those loyalty oaths. And, you know, that was just, you know, a way of breaking the unions. And they unfortunately did a great job because only two unions survived that. And it was the people that work on the docks and the electrical union. But pretty much they broke a lot of unions and scared a lot of people. But, you know, people are making a comeback, so.
Well, and then Reagan busted the unions a lot with, I don't know if you're old enough to remember.
I do remember. You're talking about the air traffic controller. Yeah. Yeah, and after that was amazing because that's after they supported him and, you know, endorsed him for president. And then he turned around and stabbed him in the back when the first of the union busting really started happening in mass. Was when Reagan got elected, and it continued under Clinton and Obama. So you know you can't just blame it on the Republicans because there's really been a shift against labor in this country.
Oh yeah, Clinton did a lot too that I don't remember exactly. Are you familiar? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
NAFTA. I mean, there's a huge thing.
Yeah.
It basically wiped out almost the entire, you know, industrial base of the United States. You know,
yeah.
A lot of those jobs went south, you know, and he signed us into the World Trade Organization. And so then it became a race to the bottom, but both on the environmental, you know, side of things, where we're here up at the Public Interest Environmental Conference, but also, you know, a lot of those jobs, you know, they just go to the jobs will just go to the lowest wage. And what happened is when they signed NAFTA, they went all down to Mexico. It also displaced, you know, 2 million corn farmers because they couldn't compete with American agribusiness. And then when China joined the World Trade Organization, all those jobs went from Mexico over to China. So,
right, and so how can you negotiate in the United States when the corporation is just going to say, well, we're just going to go to China or Mexico?
Yeah, that's the thing. Unfortunately, now they've lowered the wages so much, and they've got these right-to-work states where, you know, some of the jobs are coming back because, you know, they're paying jobs that, you know, can compete with the Chinese, you know, because they don't have to do the, you know, the shipping cost.
And then I don't know if you're familiar with the Dos Passos trilogy, the USA trilogy. But
yes, I have read all three of those.
He talks about there's a bridge right here in Washington where it starts with a C. Anyway, it's the Skookumchuck River that they Weyerhaeuser, I think it was Weyerhaeuser. Don't hold me to that, Weyerhaeuser. Don't sue me. But they got the American Legion to go anti-union because they claimed it was communist. So they fired. They got the American Legion ex. Not that there's anything wrong with veterans, but in this period, this was in the 30s, and they hung this guy from this bridge up here.
Yeah,
it's the Centralia Massacre.
Centralia Massacre. Yeah, that actually that's coming up. It was actually almost 100 years ago this year when that happened.
Oh, yeah. It was in the teens.
Yeah, it was in the teens, and they're having a celebration, not a celebration, but a commemoration of the event. Yeah, but that was, you know, that was multiple people that were killed in some of those events, you know, and the labor, you know, you look at labor in Europe, and it's very strong. It really controls the government. It's you know, the government is afraid of labor, and here in the United States, we had the most violent labor, you know, riots, and you know, just. The government supported it. They brought in the National Guard on behalf of a private corporation, and you know it's been a fight, you know, tooth and nail the whole time. And people don't realize at this point in time they just, you know, take the fact that they got an 8-hour day and they have weekends and they have all these other things for granted. But they don't realize that was paid with you know, sweat and
people
blood
died
and,
for that.
And people dying. Yeah.
And the government supported corporations even back then.
Oh, yeah.
The corporations of their day.
It's like Calvin Cooley said, you know, the business of government is business, you know.
And well, what? The police, too, are basically came out of the Pinkertons that worked for corporations.
Yeah, a lot of the police.
To shut down rebellions.
Rebellions, yeah. You know, and the police have their union, but, you know, it's sad because they don't recognize their union brothers. But, you know, our idea of the industrial workers of the world is that, you know, if we work across, you know, national boundaries, you know, that we and in the same industry, we can actually shut down, you know, the industry, and we can raise wages for everybody. It's very hard when you have a totalitarian country like China, though, to organize, and they've really had some repression there.
Right, and I know I don't want to go off on this tangent, but I noticed China has done a lot of stuff with our money. They've taken our money and built up. They have, you know, a railroad that goes clear across their country, and have spent it. They've spent it wisely. The money that they've basically stolen, corporations have basically given to China. At least they've actually done something with it.
Yeah, a lot of our money goes into a private person's pocket.
I didn't want to. Yeah, most of it goes to the aristocrats. I didn't want to go off on that tangent. You and I also, we mentioned Louise Michel. If there's anything you want to say about her, Louise Michel was an anarchist during the bread riots in
in
the Paris Commune.
Late 1800s, early 1900s, is when she was doing her thing.
And that was about labor.
Yeah.
Back then,
it was, you know, well, it started with the they had Paris. They were having a war, and I think with Prussia. And in the middle of the war, they were just depleting, you know, the French society, and the Parisians rose up and declared themselves a communal state, and they were able to do it for a while. But after a while, they instead of fighting the Prussians, they turned on the French people themselves, the military, and defeated the Paris Commune, which was a beautiful experiment and one I'd like to see repeated. That also happened, you know, during the 1930s in Spain, where we had a, you know, people trying to live communally, but also without leaders. The idea, you know, of libertarian socialism. is what I, you know, I'd like to say. And it's not an economic libertarianism, because it's really hard to compete. You know, me and GM, I can't compete with it. You know, so people that say, you know, well, you know, economic laissez-faire, that's, no, it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't work. And anyway, but but we're talking social libertarianism, where basically, you know, if somebody's doing something and it doesn't affect you, if they're gay, if they want to smoke pot, whatever, if it, you know, it doesn't affect you, keep your damn nose out of it, you know. And then, you know, the socialism is basically we would make sure that everybody's provided for, including the earth itself and including other critters, you know.
I'm calling it social welfare rather than socialism myself, but
yeah.
So they don't, I don't want to scare people. There's because it's just social welfare. We're talking about a safety net.
A safety net, yeah. You know, like a floor. And that's, you know, right now there's no floor. We got people living on the streets, you know, and that's sad. But, you know, there's other aspects too. We want to, you know, what we want to push for is decentralization. We want to have, you know, people making the decisions on as local as level as possible, you know.
Well, because, yeah, absolute power corrupts absolutely, as they
yeah,
say.
Yeah, we have centralized power either in Salem or in Washington. You know, that really seems like it doesn't reflect our issues. You know, like you see this a lot in the legislature. Like when a city wants to do something, you know, progressive, the state will say, you can't vote that way. They make a preemptive law that says, you know, you can't, in your little own community, have this special law, you know, where you know it's best for your community. And so that's the problem about centralized power.
Well, and I know it's austerity, too. I don't want to take up too much more of your time.
Oh, but it's all good.
The austerity programs, too. The Fed, you become dependent on federal money, which is either, that's not the issue so much as the Fed starts spending money on war. And then there's no money for the cities and social programs.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about this last night. I mean, it seems crazy because who's the biggest user of petroleum in the world?
The military.
The U.S. military.
Yeah. And what who's the biggest polluter in the world?
And
the
biggest
military.
Polluter. And the bases are the most polluted places. And what is the main purpose of the U.S. military? It's to secure oil. You know,
that's
like
ironic.
A,
yeah.
Yeah. So they're out there. Why don't they just, you know, I mean, I see the size. Another thing, you know, the industrial workers of the world are against, you know, is the whole idea of, you know, nation states. You think if you get too big of a state, you have problems. Actually, if you look scaled down, you look at places like Luxembourg or places like Iceland. You know, in Iceland, after the 2008 crisis, they dealt with things. Those bankers all went to prison.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and they can deal with it. I mean, you know, they're a country of 50,000 people, so it's easier to deal with things.
Right,
you know,
but still.
But that's why, you know, you want more local control. And the other idea of the industrial workers of the world is horizontalism. That means we share power. You know, when you have a pyramid, what happens when you die? When a pharaoh dies and you're in a pyramid, you know what happens if you're a servant?
You get buried with him.
Yeah, you get buried with him. You get buried alive with him, you know? And unfortunately, you know, that's these leaders of ours, you know, especially in terms of climate chaos, you know, that's kind of where they're leading us, and I don't want to go there.
Yeah, the hierarchy. All right, so we discussed this before. I've got a list of demands myself of what I would want if we did a national strike here in the United States.
Well, I don't want to, you know, discount this, but we are so far from being ready. You have to have all the systems into place to make sure that everybody gets provided for.
Right.
Because they're going to jump on any little flaw that you have to try to put your general strike down.
Well, this is why we were just talking about CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, and the mutual aid societies is what I'm,
yeah,
in my opinion, is what is going to help that, because it's going to crash. There's going to be many people displaced by corporations anyway, conservative and liberal. You're going to see a huge amount of people displaced by corporate greed.
Well, what you see when there's, you know, when there's a calamity, or, you know, a big something happens, people are forced to do things for themselves. You know, it took so long after Katrina for the government to get in there. People would just start providing for themselves.
Right.
And that's usually what happens when there's, you know, when there's an earthquake or a flood or something like that. You know, people have to, and it doesn't matter all these differences of right and left and that. You just have to, you know, it's survival at that point in time.
All these disasters, what I've heard with Hurricane Sandy, too, is they basically put back the status quo rather than change. They didn't change anything. I don't want to say that they only helped the rich people, but I don't know if that's true, but...
They did actually get rid of a lot of public housing. In fact, one of the people said, you know, what we couldn't do, God did, and we got rid of the public housing, and they cleared out a lot of the poor people from New Orleans, and, you know, and it was just... And a lot of the housing. It was a big...
Gentrification by hurricane.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow. Well, okay, so my list here is no war profits. I'd like to see just an end. Why do people profit from war? Even if it were a capitalist system, I don't see why you should... If you do business in this country, it should be patriotic. You shouldn't have to profit from war.
Well, what they called it back in World War I was the merchants of death, you know, and people making a lot of money off that. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how our economy could do without the arms manufacturers, because unfortunately it's written into a lot of our economy. I'd like to see it go away. I think that's the ultimate in class betrayal, when you fight against another fellow worker. And that, you know, there's just kind of on the 100th anniversary of World War I, and that's what happened towards the end, is a lot of people were just saying, now why are we fighting for this rich guy, you know, the Kaiser, and why are we fighting for the king, and why are we fighting for we should just bail, and, you know.
They were cousins, too. They were related to each other in World War I. Yeah.
A lot of them were, but, you know, people started to bail, and that's when the United States came in, because so many people were defecting from the military. And, you know, I think it's a big waste, and, you know, a lot of these wars are, you know, are manufactured.
Yeah, and then so...
That's a good one.
I'd like to see... Walmart is the biggest employer in the world. So if we were to unionize Walmart...
What about Amazon? It's getting up there.
Yeah, but... unionize Amazon and Walmart is what... I didn't think of Amazon, but I'd like to see some charters revoked, some corporate charters.
That is something we really need, because that's... A lot of it comes down to the power of the corporation. And you want to talk about pyramids? There's a pyramid if you ever saw one. Uh-huh. Unaccountable leadership.
And then foreign direct investment is when, I don't know if you're familiar with this, is when that's the term when corporations go to third world countries.
Okay.
Instead of, and take their and take our jobs with them. So if you're going to do that, we're going to tax you. I'd like to see I'd like to see it ended completely, but at least... Tax foreign direct investment.
Oh, it's, you know, sad when poor people in the middle class get taxed. And then I read, this is a butt kicker, when you read about how Amazon paid zero taxes last year.
Right, he hasn't paid taxes.
What the hell?
Bezos has never paid taxes.
Never paid taxes.
Yeah, and...
And that's the way it is with a lot of corporations, and that's why we can't, you know, their park system is on a string budget. The schools are always hating it for more money, and it's just like, you know, you have to cut out art and physical education programs, and it's just, you know, well, there's a way we could do it. Let's tax the corporations. You know, back in the 50s, you know, people said that was the glorious time. You know, Eisenhower was in office. She also didn't have any rights for gay people, black people, and all sorts of things. But you know what we had to have back then? We had the most people in unions. The corporations and the rich paid the highest amount of taxes. And, you know, that's an incredible thing.
Well, and the reason was is they use the infrastructure more than we do. They need Bill Gates and these guys. If there wasn't a bunch of roads and there wasn't, you know, a contract place where you could a third party for your contracts and stuff like that, the government, they use it much more than we do. It is why they should pay a higher amount of taxes.
Oh, yeah. You know, plus, they should at least get a tax at the same rate as the private citizen, you know, but not paying any taxes. They do it. And they have a whole slew of lawyers that make loopholes. So anytime you create a new law, they have a way, they got some way to jump through them.
Well, and then my example, too, is that in the 80s, we gave GE money
bailout.
Back.
I remember that.
Well, but we also gave them money to do research and development. They got a tax break. For doing research and development. Why do I have to pay for their research and development?
Well, you have to pay for the research and development for prescriptions that go to a private corporation.
Yeah.
You're paying for that, and then they turn around and charge you through the nose. And then sometimes it's just tweaking some little thing on the prescription that isn't anything. So,
right,
you know,
and most of it's invented by
government subsidies.
Funding.
I mean, it's the corporate welfare. You know, I used to have a worker that would tell me, oh, you know, all this, you know, the welfare queen and this and that. You know, I said, well, look, I'll tell you, the trickle that goes down to people compared to the torrent that goes up to the corporations in terms of welfare, you know, you want to get rid of, you know, socialism, you know, or anything that we have that's a social safety net? Well, I'll tell you one big social thing that we have. It's the military. Everybody's paying into that. And, you know, and it hasn't been a department of, not to the name, it hasn't been a Department of Defense. It's been a Department of Offense.
Yeah.
And we have bases all over the world. This is such a waste of money.
Way more than any other country. Yeah.
Way more than any country. And all the five countries behind us combined is more than their military, as our military budgets. It's insane.
Yeah. And and if you don't want socialism, just pay people what they're worth. For what they do, you won't need any socialism.
But you know, everything's socialist. The roads are socialist. Actually, look at what is socialism. Socialism is basically where everybody pays for things that help everybody, right? You know, like the roads are socialism. The library is socialism. You know, it's like.
Yeah, I'm using the term social welfare. The definition of socialism is where the government owns the means of production.
But the penny jar at the grocery store to help, you know, somebody pay for their operation, which doesn't do hardly anything, that could be called socialism. Sharing is socialism, you know.
Well, it's cheaper. Social welfare is better for all of us. It's for your own good to help your neighbor.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Definitely. Especially, you know, when you have health concerns, you know, like some contagious disease can spread around. We need stuff like that.
Well, yeah, you could end up with a disease, yeah. And then so my last thing is I would like to see a strike for deforestation, that a national strike until we stop cutting down trees.
Oh, and that's insane, because I was just reading an article last week about this. It was in the 1930s. Henry Ford was making a car out of hemp. And then the plastics industry came about at the same time. But you can basically blow out, you know, in the same way as fiberglass, hemp. So we could be replacing plastic and hemp and all these other things. The only thing we should be using, you know, wood for is high-end furniture.
Right, or decoration if you want to put a piece of wood over your fireplace mantle or something.
But, you know, using it for paper and using it for all these other
right.
things.
And structurally for a house, I don't know, why would you use wood that you're never going to see it. It's inside of a house.
Yeah, I mean,
and you would have more higher paid jobs because it's more. It's a little more. You know, laying bricks it takes more skill.
But they've also made houses out of hemp. You know, just blown it out like you would fiberglass.
I just saw where you can do straw bales out of hemp, out of industrial hemp.
Yeah, I mean, you can use it for. This is a whole other subject, but I mean, you can use it for. Fuel. You can use it to make a a biogas. You can use it for the oil. You can make a very fine oil that you can lubricate the car. You can make clothing. In fact, the whole George Senior Bush, his parachute was made out of hemp. They used it on the cells on the USS Constitution. It works way better than nylon with salt water.
And the reason we're not doing it is because of subsidies for multinational corporations
exactly.
that are using other technology. That is antiquated technology, whereas hemp is.
And we're importing our hemp from China, where it used to grow all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
And in fact, it grows as a weed in the Midwest. They call it Nebraska no-high.
Yeah, but you wouldn't. It's not cost effective. It would be more cost effective to have a hemp based economy than a timber-based economy.
But it threatens the cotton industry, and it threatens a lot of industries. And so, and that's why if you look back at the... Oh, this is a totally different subject. But, you know, if you look back, there was a conspiracy to do away with marijuana. They called it marijuana, and people didn't know what they were talking about. Because I take CBD oil for one of my health issues, and it's been so amazing. But back in the day, they had 100 different patents for cannabis at the time, and when they came out with marijuana, people didn't know what they were talking about, because that was just like a Mexican slang term, and so they did away with it, and everyone was like, wow, what just happened, you know?
Well, but it is an IWW. I could tie it to the IWW, because these are jobs that could be had right there.
Yeah.
Rather than being stuck in a, I mean, for instance, they came out with the Feller Buncher, so now they cut trees with a machine and got rid of a bunch of jobs. I was just talking to them, to another group here.
Oh yeah,
that they've lost jobs because of mechanization of the and subsidies of the subsidized forest industry.
Oh,
whereas hemp would provide all kinds of jobs. It already is right now.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The recreational hemp is.
You know, like last year they had the equivalent of Earth First here did an action up in outside of outside of Mackenzie Bridge. And basically, you know, we found out, and they you know, they were trying to stop this logging project, but we found out all the loggers were from Idaho, which I had to write a letter to the editor about that, because you're always telling us your, you know, jobs, you know. And I was, and I've been up there, and I've seen this machine that they, that it picks up a one guy running one
right.
truck. It grabs the log, cuts it through, turns it on its side, and pits it on a truck.
Well, it's so straight it out of the Dr. Seuss, the Lorax.
Yeah, I mean, their whole idea, they wouldn't automate things, you know, if they were so concerned about jobs, they wouldn't automate the mills. In fact, a lot of the milling goes off on shore on giant ships, or they send it overseas.
Oh, yeah, they send paper over to China, and they make boxes in China, and then send them right back. So,
and
yeah,
that should all be him too.
No, that's so all that, but all that I can tie into international industrial workers, because it would be appropriate to strike for that stuff, because they're getting rid of our jobs. So, anything else you want to wrap it up?
Sure. Yeah, I just wanted to promote a couple of things. We have our weekly monthly meetings. They're the first Wednesday of the month, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the World Cafe. That's 449 Blair Boulevard in Eugene there, in the Whitaker. And then we have our monthly film, and that's the first Wednesdays of the month, 7 to 9. And we usually have a discussion afterwards. It's at the Manal Riley House, 601 West 13th Avenue. It's right across from the fairgrounds. And the next movie that we have coming up is called American Socialist, The Life and Times of Eugene Debs. And I don't know, do you know much about Eugene Debs?
Not much, but...
He helped find the industrial workers of the world, but he also... was a really outspoken person. He was thrown into jail and into prison after World War One for speaking out against World War One. And while he was in prison, he received 1 million votes. And he was a big inspiration for Bernie Sanders and FDR's New Deal. So, you know, just an incredible guy. In fact, his house is a national part of the National Park Service. Can you imagine a socialist house, a part of the National Park Service? Never guess it, you know.
Now, he's not the one that with Carnegie that he stabbed Jim Fisk or tried to shot.
Oh no, you're thinking of I'm trying to remember. Emma Goldman.
Berkman, Alexander Berkman.
Emma Goldman's partner. No, he was a pretty nonviolent guy, but you know, he also did the Pullman strike. He was just a very big labor organizer back in the day,
and literally ran for presidency from prison.
Prison, 1 million votes, and he ran for five times. But you know, a lot of the ideas eventually came out. You know, especially during the New Deal, and you know what. But Roosevelt himself said about the New Deal is we're saving capitalism from itself. So, but
right.
They threw us a lot of bones, and they were good bones, you know. But
because capitalism is so arrogant that it'll destroy itself.
Yeah.
What? Hey, can people, just out of curiosity, can people suggest movies for you?
Yeah,
guys?
We do that too. If you want to, you can. I don't know how I could get, if you could remember my email, but I can repeat it twice. But yeah, people suggest movies to me all the time, and a lot of times, in fact, this movie we're showing next month about Debs was suggested because this is the 100th anniversary of him being thrown in prison for speaking out.
Yeah, if you want to give out your email.
Okay, yeah, it's iconoclasmo.scott@gmail.com. And that's, one more time, iconoclasmo.scott@gmail.com. And we're also doing a Know Your Rights, Know Your Labor Rights. So we're going to be talking to people about what their rights are in their workplace, because a lot of times people get pushed around at their job and they don't have dignity in the job. In fact, that's the main purpose of us, is to help organize people in their workplace. You know, hopefully organize them as a collective, but if not, they should at least organize them as a collective, you know, where they can stand against management. And but we also want to send that out to society eventually, where, you know, we go through kind of a leaderless society. But that's going to be at, I don't know. I don't have my glasses. You might have to read this. Know Your Labor Rights.
Yeah, I need bifocals too. 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Saturday, March 16th, 2019 at 688 Charnelton Street,
yeah,
Eugene, Oregon.
And that's the Ask Me Hall that's right there off of 7th and
All right, I may make I can make that and record that.
Yeah, that would be awesome if
so
you could.
10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Saturday, March 16th, 688 Charnelton Street. All right, Scott from
Industrial Workers of the World.
Industrial Workers of the World, thanks for coming in.
Okay, thank you
And
so
for
much.
All you do.
And you have a nice day.
All right, thanks. Okay. I may have another interview. I was supposed to have another interview, but I don't see them. So what I have for you, though, an exclusive here on Talk is Cheap, KPW. This morning I was listening to NPR, as I'm apt to do, and listening to their propaganda over there. And what they're discussing, instead of discussing the real issues in Venezuela and Israel, they're talking about a thing called Momo. And what it is there's a rumor, supposedly, that there's a YouTube video that when children watch it, it tells them to kill themselves. So I actually have a Momo that I found on YouTube. So I'm going to play that for you, coming up here on Talk is Cheap. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KEPW 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Radio.
all that.
We'll come back to that. So I have an exclusive for you here on KEPW 97.3 FM.
Whoops. Okay. Sorry about that. So I have an exclusive for you here on KEPW 97.3. We'll come back to that, Alan Holdsworth, in a few minutes. So just keep listening if you were into that. All right. So they're reporting that there is a Momo is a video on YouTube that tells children to kill themselves, among other things. So I have one of these videos, believe it or not, exclusively here on KEPW 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Radio. So here goes.
Request here from Vicki Ulinette of Fort Wayne. She asks for page 47 of Fanny Hill by John Cleland. I lay down then upon the couch, and Charles finished undressing himself, revealing to my eyes that column of delight whose impatient gestures signaled the prelude to love's ecstatic union. Urged on by consuming passion, we were quickly joined in soft embrace, his hands exploring the fiery, moist territory whence derived my intoxicating pleasures. Most readily I obeyed my love's soft-spoken command to alter my recumbent position that he might gain swift entrance. But how can I describe the overwhelming bliss which swept through me as the delicious velvet tip divided the gates of pleasure and the ivory shaft insinuated itself to its furthest penetration, only to withdraw and plunge again and again. Thoroughly inundated by the tides of pleasure which flowed forth from these violent actions, I yielded up the last vestiges of resistance, giving myself entirely to the rapturous rhythm which carried us all too quickly over love's crest and left us exhausted and joyous upon the shore. Well, that was an excellent request, Vicky. Hope you enjoyed it. Now we have another request here from Kippy Pratt of Springfield, and he asks for page 43 of Philosophy in the Bedroom by Marquis de Sade. Oh, I see we're running a little late, and I'll get to this tomorrow, but I do want to make a special announcement. It seems a boy from Newton let his parents stay in the room during make-believe time, or at least it was his mother, because she called the station, and it's a good thing the management doesn't watch the show because they thought it was a crank call. But I'm only mentioning this to tell you that really it's very important that you make sure the big people leave the room during make-believe time, because if you don't do that, the management will catch on to what we're doing, and we'll have to go off the air, and I won't be able to take your requests and so on. So really, please, it's very important. Make sure the big people leave the room during make-believe time, okay? Now, as I said, we'll get to this tomorrow when we'll have more time. We'll get to the end of the show now. You can call the big people back in the room. Jerry, you want to hit the music?
All right, 97.3 FM KEPW, Eugene Peaceworks Radio. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
Johnny. Abby. You're listening to KAPW LP 97.3 FM. We already did a station ID. We're coming back to you live from the conference now, I hope. And I wanted to explain a little bit. We lost the beginning of DJ Susty's show, Talk is Cheap. So that will air again at some time in the future. He'll be able to tell you about that on his show next week. Do you know what you're doing next week?
Well, this lady was very upset at one of the lectures she was at the legal lecture, and she was very upset about fracking going on in her town in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And just was over the moon. I don't know how to explain how distraught. The woman was distraught over fracking.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna play that.
So you're going to keep doing pilk coverage for a while.
Yeah, I've recorded several lectures that it looks. They said that they recorded these lectures that you could download.
Yeah.
But when both Rick and I noticed when we're in the lecture halls, several of them, there's no one recording in any way that would be used for a download. There's people recording on a personal device,
yeah.
But there's nothing there that they could use to download. So this stuff is probably going to be exclusively available here. So, I'll be playing. I recorded at least two lectures and got at least two interviews with people. And
cool.
Her. And the interview I just did, and then,
We'll try and track down, you know, if they do have everything recorded available, because, of course, our listeners might be interested in that as well. I am.
They're saying that they're going to upload. They're going to have stuff on the.
Yeah, I'm sure they will a lot of it.
Law Center site.
I'm sure they will a lot of it, but it sounds like you're saying maybe some of the things that
the ancillary tertiary lectures. I don't think they have. And the girl
I
just
see what
didn't
you mean.
Know that.
I think Rob, right? Probably just the keynotes.
Yeah, the
that
girl
would be
just
my
didn't
guess.
Didn't know that, which she can't.
Right.
It's a big.
Yeah,
conference.
No,
it's
I mean,
hard to know
so
everything that's
panels.
Going on.
Anybody, you know, if you're listening, we've pointed you to their website so many times, but Paul, P as in Paul, IELC.org. You look at their brochure, there's, you know, every moment there's multiple things to choose among.
Oh, this is an amazing, and just the hallways, plus there's booths in the hallways between the lectures that you can talk to people about stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just a very incredible networking event.
We have somebody who's working on a new show on the station, and I told her about this. She was here for an hour and a half, and she said she got leads for six or seven interviews.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the reasons I cut in also now from the music was that we actually have a couple of news bits. We talked about that on the news team, and we Howard Mitchell edited a couple things that people brought in. We have an interview with Rand Dawson. Talking about things in his town, and then we have something about fracking in Alaska.
Yeah, that's this lady that is.
There we go.
It's so, very upset.
Well, let's play that one first. Then we'll go straight into that, and then we'll have Rand Dawson talking about his hometown and his experience here at Pilk. I haven't even heard all these yet. So.
I haven't heard it either, which is why I don't really have much background on her.
World premiere.
Yeah.
So everybody, tune in and listen. This is some.
We're all in this together.
Yeah, this is some fresh. Clips and reporting from the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference. And we'll either come back live or go to some music after this, but there will be more programming, at least until 6 p.m., possibly till 7 p.m. here on KEPW 97.3 FM. Thank you for listening.